just watch. Don't try to change. Just watch. We use the word spirituality, but you don't even need that word, to be honest. It's really just getting back home, getting to finally be a human being instead of a human doer. What's up, guys? Welcome to Sauna Sessions. Today we have a very special episode. The guest will be myself. So this is a solo episode. We're going to have some fun. And today I'm thinking we're going to talk about spirituality. Why spirituality can save the world. We're going to talk about my journey towards spirituality and the difference between spirituality and religion. And we've got my producer Dustin here to throw questions back and forth.
That's right.
And we're going to have some fun and dive deep. And I think it'll be very, very valuable because spirituality for me is the most important thing in my life, in my existence. So I'm excited because this is a part of my life that I have very rarely shared publicly. So I'm excited. And so Dustin, let's jump in.
Nice. Yeah. So, what is your definition of spirituality? Let's start there, because people tie it so much into religion, especially when it comes to like Christianity or some of the big three religions that. Mm.
Religion, I look at as more of a system, often a control system. You can't talk about the history of human beings without talking about the history of religion. Religion has, I think, given us many, many good things, and it has also done a lot of damaging things to society, to people, to minorities, to the earth. One of my favorite books is from Will and Ariel Durant. It's called Lessons in History. It's about this thick. Will and Ariel Durant, they're historians. They've won Pulitzer Prizes, and Lessons in History is by far the best history book I've ever read in my life. And they touch on religion in one of the chapters. And, I became cynical about religion, during my teenage years. Mm-hmm. And in this book, they talk about how religion has actually serves a purpose. It serves a purpose to keep society civil. When you know that there's, or when you think that there's a man upstairs that's looking at your every move, you're less likely to do to sin or to do bad things to other people and to your community. So their premise was that religion has done a good job in keeping society civil. Laws do the same thing, right? The laws that we have, punishments, but the biggest punishment, right, is eternal damnation. So that aspect of religion, I understand it. However, spirituality is a lot different. Spirituality should be the outcome of religion. So religion is what you know. It's like, I know this verse, I go to church, I do this, but spirituality is how you live. I consider spirituality and science actually the same thing. So I got my degree in physical anthropology, biological anthropology. And so I've learned about the scientific method, scientific theories, and science in itself is a discipline. And science is a process. So some people say, oh, science is bad. No, science is just a process. Mm. Science is the empirical pursuit for the truth. Spirituality is the experiential pursuit of the nature of reality or the truth. So they're very similar. Yoga is a science. I love when the Dalai Lama, he said, if science ever disagreed with Buddhism, well, we'd have to start rethinking Buddhism. So there are certain spiritual traditions that I definitely leaned into. But overall, I think spirituality is very different from religion, and spirituality is more of your heart. Religion is how you appear.
Interesting. With that definition, it almost sounds to me too a lot like religion is a lot of like giving you the rules, and spirituality feels like finding how things work. Kind of in the same way that you're saying with science, is that science doesn't create the definitions. It just looks for, you know, how does this work? What is, you know, what is it? What is out there?
Yeah, spirit. You know, the truth is, as I think Krishnamurti put it, a pathless land. You can go many paths up the mountain to get to the top. You can go the Christian route, the Buddhist route, the Muslim route, the Sufi route, the Hindu route. You can go all of these different routes up the mountain. But some people, I think they get stuck. You know, they get stuck in ideas, and spirituality is, it's a dimension that it goes beyond just ideas. It goes into, like I said, the heart and who you really are beyond the ideas. This is why I love in the Bible, it said, I think Jesus said that only until you become a child can you reach the kingdom of heaven. So it's like you're unlearning everything that you learned as an adult, and you're becoming that curious, pure child, right? In the Buddhist, they call it the beginner's mind, to look at the world as a child, just pure and with eyes of curiosity and mystery and wonder. This is what I consider to be spirituality. And when you get into the dogma, it can become a trap. It can become a prison, a place that you're comfortable in, but you don't really attain the truth. In philosophy class, we learned about Blaise Pascal, philosopher, and Pascal had something called Pascal's wager, which was, he basically said, the benefit of believing in God outweighs the punishment, right? Or rather, the punishment outweighs the potential benefit, right? It's like you got two choices, either eternal damnation for not believing in this God, or if you believe in it, then you get eternal peace and you become an angel. And this is what he offered philosophically. And I never got that. I never understood it. I didn't think it was true, because I feel like true spirituality and true connection with that which is just a power beyond any idea or any thinking, you can't turn it into a wager or a business deal. You can't turn it into a transaction. It's really got to be all or nothing. You either live with the truth in your heart, or you live as a facade or with a mask and as a quote unquote do-gooder.
You've had this path of spirituality and kind of exploring the world. What advice do you have for someone who's like, you know, let's say, a 17-year-old living in the middle of a city, don't really know the wildlife, just cement buildings, don't have the money to really get out and explore the world. How do they start exploring spirituality?
I think there's many ways. One of my favorite quotes is a man said, yeah, I believe in God. I just spell it N-A-T-U-R-E. And I love that, right? I think when we can get into nature, if someone's living in the city, if they can go to the park or go to the woods, they can get in touch with animals, with wildlife, with insects, with the birds, with the wind. That quiets the mind. And when the mind is quiet, you can hear the heart. I think God speaks in silence. And I think it's only when this noise of the mind, the chatter of the mind can quiet down, can we really hear the beauty of who and what we are. They say, you know, if it's a Hindu parable, they say, if you meet the Buddha on the road, what do you do? This is actually a Zen koan. Have you heard this one before?
No, I don't know this one.
They say, if you meet the Buddha on the road, what do you do? And the answer to this Zen koan is you kill him. And, you know, this can startle a lot of people. Like, what they mean is, if you meet God or anything outside of yourself, it's just an idea. So you have to get rid of it. You have to kill the idea of God to meet God. You have to kill the idea of Buddha to meet Buddha. kill God to find, and you will find yourself. So again, it comes down to quieting the mind of all of these concepts and beliefs and illusions. I love the word belief has always been interesting to me because the three letters inside of the word belief are L-I-E. I never wanted to believe in anything. I wanted to know. And I feel like if this spiritual dimension is really real, we should be able to know it and not just believe in it, not just wishfully think about it. And when you go to nature, when you, and I think we have different constitutions depending on who we are. Some people might like going to the lake. Some people might like going to the forest. But when you go to these places that you're called to, then the mind can quiet and you can meet what was always present for you, which is that eternal peace, which is the end point of spirituality. It's peace. It's freedom. It's got to be.
Interesting. So would you say that cities and that sort of thing is bad for spirituality?
I think unless you've matured, unless you've developed a practice of meditation, of stilling your mind when you're in the marketplace, of doing service. This is karma yoga. It's doing service to reach that point of love, of God, of freedom. So you can be in a busy city, but if you haven't matured spiritually, I think it is good to change your environment. Right. I mean, I think, you know, right association and right environment is so crucial, right? The people who you hang around is so crucial because they have the biggest impact on your state of mind, on the thoughts and the beliefs that you hold. So I think getting out of the city is a great idea. If you can't get out of the city, even better. I think the path of taking spirituality off the mat, off the yoga mat, and bringing it into your workplace, that will develop true strength. That this is why I love the gurus, the teachers who, you know, I love both. I love the ones who went to the Himalayan mountains and lived in a cave for 60 years, and like that's very beautiful. But also, I love the ones who, you know, became householders, who had a family, who had kids, because that spiritual practice, that's the tough one. Right. You know, we're in a studio and outside there's banging, they're fixing an elevator, right? So it's, how do you turn that into a spiritual practice?
Ooh.
Right? There's this story of this couple. They move into this house, right? New house. And you know, they unpack all their things and they start noticing this noise in the basement, and they realize it's birds. They've got birds in their home, and it's beautiful. Like, they hear the singing of the birds every now and then. They're like, oh man, this is delightful. We've got a family of birds living in our home. This is so auspicious and beautiful. Well, a couple weeks later, you know, just hearing the birds, it brings them so much joy. And so one day, home inspector comes by, inspects everything, making sure the home is, you know, it's up to standards. And he goes into the basement and comes back up and he says, hey, you know, you got a busted smoke detector. Have you been hearing a chirping or beeping sound? And the family, they're like, oh, we thought they were birds. It's like, no, you got a broken smoke detector in your basement. And ever since that point, they start living their life and they're like, this is the most annoying sound ever. We really got to get this fixed. So what happened there? Their idea, their perspective shifted. And this is the spiritual practice. So we're hearing banging outside in the elevator. They're fixing an elevator. How do we try to turn that into music, right? This might be a difficult thing for people to understand, but how do you turn the noise into music, into beauty? This is tantra. This is a beautiful spiritual practice that you can use if you're living in the city or in a busy street. You know, you hear the cars coming and going. One spiritual practice I love is when you hear the sound of an ambulance, you just give gratitude for it because you know that they're either helping someone or on their way to help someone. So this noise that is annoying, you're like, ah, I hate this noise. Now it becomes an anchor in peace and love and gratitude.
It's really interesting you bring that up, because just before the show, we were talking with Kalon, our engineer, about how that's the one thing about where he lives that he doesn't like is the sound of sirens going off all the time, which is so it's...
That's it. We've got it. If you can change your perspective of it, you change the very thing, right? When you change the way you look at things, those things you look at change.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's funny. It reminds me of even including Kalon, who's saying it. His dog barks about him all the time. But one thing a lot of people don't realize that's very interesting on that point is that, you know, when you see smaller dogs, people are like, oh, they're yappy, and they get mad at their chihuahua because it's always barking and stuff. But that's instinctually what they were trained to do. They're basically, they were, for the caballero, like a security alarm. So the cowboy could fall asleep. And if a coyote or something came, they would start barking and wake him up. Mm. And so they're just doing what they're supposed to do. Mm. And, you know, to appreciate that, you know, hey, this little thing is looking out for me. It's letting me know things are, you know, it's worried about something.
That's it. So. That's it. Well, this is why, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh said, understanding is love's other name. Mm. And I think when we have this understanding, I had no idea that was the reason that the small dogs were so yappy. I mean, they're an alarm system.
Yeah.
Right. And I think when you have more understanding of why things operate, how they do, then we can begin to love them more or greater. You know, when you really understand, you can love even greater, even more deeply.
I kind of want to go back to touching on, you said a little bit before about how spirituality and science go so close together. Do you think that somebody who doesn't believe in God, somebody who identifies as an atheist or an agnostic, can they be spiritual?
Absolutely. You know, we're using words when we say believer or atheist or agnostic. The word agnostic is a sensible, I think, perspective to have, right? It's just, I don't know. The atheist seems to be more of a certainty, right? And for me, I'm not certain about anything. I love to live in doubt, in the I don't know mind. And I think you could actually say that for me, like I said earlier, I didn't want to believe, right? I wanted to know, I wanted to find out. Having a belief of no belief is a belief. So it's better to be free of all beliefs and find out for yourself with an open mind and an open heart. I think the atheist or the agnostic has an opportunity to find out what's real. Because sometimes it's those hardcore believers that grew up in a certain tradition and religion that have a harder time finding the truth, because these ideas they're embedded generationally, right? They've been drilled down for centuries. But somebody who can be free has an opportunity to find out actually what is real. And so honestly, I don't think you need to believe in anything. What I'm saying is spirituality is more of a fragrance, a way of being, a way that you're of centeredness. You know that there's life in the plants. You know that there's mysterious forces in our Mother Earth that we don't know about. We don't have the right architecture as far as our brains go to find out these things. And if you're really scientific, then you know that's true, because the brain was never evolved to understand the complexities of the universe. The human brain was evolved to survive. We don't see everything that exists. We don't have the architecture in our eyes to see everything. We only see things that bounce off of visible light on the electromagnetic spectrum. We know with other instruments that other things exist, but we just can't perceive them with our five senses. So we know that there's a limitation. If you're a real scientist, we know that there's a limitation. But it's also, I think, when you're truly scientific and not dogmatic, you fall into a perspective that Einstein had, which was, see, Einstein believed in the God of Spinoza, the God of beauty, of design. Einstein was a sage. He talked about the human beings aren't separate, that our separateness is an illusion. And he got to this perspective through science. So I think science, again, is an avenue, and you could even take it as a spiritual practice. I mean, if you look into quantum physics and things like, you know, quantum superposition and Schrodinger's cat and, you know, these cool and amazing ideas that science has kind of established on a quantum level, they sound exactly like things that you might find in the religious texts of the Upanishads or the Vedas. So to answer your long, that's a roundabout way of saying that absolutely, an atheist who is really devoted to science can 100% find spirituality. You don't have to call it spirituality, but that doesn't matter. What you call it doesn't matter anyway.
That's fair. One thing that you said before is essentially kind of like quieting the mind and how nature can help with that.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people out there who really seem sort of afraid of silence. I see it all the time, even with people who like will come over and I just sitting in a silent room with someone else just makes them uncomfortable and they feel a need to say something, even if they sound stupid.
Mm.
We had a guest that was talking a couple days ago that he doesn't like to be alone. Even when he goes out in nature, he has to bring people with him.
Mm.
How do you think people can learn to make that shift, to be okay with the silence, to really be okay with finding themselves and sitting with themselves?
Mm. Yeah, I think knowing themselves, this is the way. This is the way. That sounds like Mandalorian. Have you seen Mandalorian?
I haven't yet. I need to. I'm so behind on TV shows. Yeah.
This is the way. There was a study done where they gave participants some alone time in a room. And I think it was maybe 30 minutes to an hour. And they just had them sit there. But they had the opportunity, if they got bored, to administer electric shocks to themselves. And crazy enough, I think it was almost 70 to 75% of the people couldn't stand the silence, so they actually had to shock themselves. And it was a painful shock.
Ooh, right.
Which, you know, brings me back to an ancient philosopher. He said the cause of all man's suffering is inability to sit in a room by himself with his own thoughts. When we can get in touch with that silence, I think we know that it is beautiful. It's just the mind that tells us otherwise, right? It's the mind that fills us with negative thoughts and painful thoughts. And we need the distraction to get us away from what I didn't do or how bad of a person I think I am. But when we can understand that we actually aren't these thoughts, we aren't the thinking mind, this is the first step, the first and the last step that somebody has to take. And it's rare that somebody is even interested in that. But I think a human existence where you can break the addiction to thoughts is what human existence is all about. So there's many practices, there's mantras that you can say if you're in those situations where you don't like the sound of silence, because in actuality it's not silence, it's you thinking.
Mm.
The idle mind is the devil's playground, right? You've heard this.
Ooh, yeah.
This saying. So this is when the negative thoughts arise. So I think the more and more that we practice and the more that we can attune to that space in between the thoughts, the silence, the better we are, the better we become familiar with the silence. Like I said, I think God speaks in silence, love comes in silence. And to get to that place of silence is actually something that we all know very well, because we buy expensive beds, right? $1,000 beds, $4,000 mattresses. I know some people. And then we put $3,000 cooling blankets on top of them. To go to a place where nothing exists, I'm talking about sleep.
Ooh.
Right? We don't even exist there. But yet we find it so beautiful. Deep sleep. We're like, Dustin, how'd you sleep? Oh, I slept well. It's like, what happened? Nothing happened. I don't know. I wasn't there. So it's like sleep is the highest form of meditation. And it is that silence that we really crave. And we know we love sleep. We love going to that place where there's no troubles, there's no thoughts. And that's what nature does too. Nature quiets the mind. So I guess to answer your question, it's really finding your portal into the silence. Some people it might be meditation. Some people it might be walking. Some people it might be dancing, right? Some people it might be swimming. Some people it might be skydiving. But I think you have to come to a place where you start observing it, observing the silence, observing the mind. Because when you can come to that witness state, which is your real power state, then you're no longer a victim of the mind, right? They say the mind is a powerful servant, but a horrible master. When you can become the witness of the thinking mind, this is when you come become who and what you truly are, which is pure awareness. The word Buddha actually means awaken one. So when the Buddha was asked by a reporter, he said, sir, are you a god? He's like, no. Sir, are you a saint? He's like, no. Sir, are you a priest? He's like, no. He's like, sir, what are you? He said, I am awareness. So this brings me to a great and powerful point. The I am state is so powerful, right? We always add a word after I am. I am Prince Ye. I am a poet. I am Dustin. I am this. I am black. I am white. I am Mexican. I am Asian. But what is the I am? And this, if you can focus on just the pure I am, when you take all the words after I am away, I am this body. What is the I am? Right? Because don't we say my body? Don't we say my mind, my thoughts? What is the my? And this is an open secret. It's an overlooked truth in our world. It's so simple that it's overlooked because it's so simple. But if we can get to the root of who and what we are, that I am-ness, this is power, this is peace, this is silence, this is love, this is that which cannot even be talked about. And the first spiritual book that I ever picked up, it's called the Tao Te Ching, Book of the Way. Some say the wisest book ever written. It's the most translated book in the world, second only to the Bible. In the Tao, it says, the Tao that can be spoken is not the Tao. So we're using this medium of the podcast. I'm using words, but the truth is actually beyond all words. It's beyond any expression. The best way to express it, honestly, is just with a smile. That's why you see the saints, the gurus like Ramana Maharshi, and you can just look in their eyes and you see a spaciousness, an emptiness, a love, a peace. His greatest teaching was his silence. And if the silence didn't work, he would use words.
Ooh. Interesting. Mm. Okay. So you talked a lot about how to get into spirituality, how to kind of find ways. What do you think that spirituality can really do for the world and for society? And
so, you know, in America, we've got pills for everything. We got pills for toe pain, ankle pain, back pain, jaw pain, you know, eye pain, headache, whatever. So in India, there used to be just one pill for everything. And a word that defines or describes that phenomenon is called panacea. And I'd consider spirituality the panacea for the issues, for the problems that we have on earth. Because when you can come back to that I am space, well, you realize that, okay, I don't have to be sexist because I'm actually not this body. I don't have to be racist because I'm not this body. I'm not this race. I'm something before all of that, right? You recognize that I'm not separate, that I am. Everybody on earth says has the same name. They all say I am, right? So I am one with all things. So there's no need to exploit anybody else because you recognize that you're only exploiting the energy which is already inside of you. So when you can get to this space, peace arises naturally. You don't have to make any more laws or anything. The laws become written in your heart. It's more of an intuitive knowing, but it does take a deep intelligence, and not mental intelligence, but a deep intelligence to get to this point. A sensitivity, I guess, is more appropriate word. And when you have that sensitivity, you just recognize that you're one with all things. And as Ram Dass said, ultimately, we're just walking each other home. We're all in this sinking canoe together. We all have our own special manifestations. And this is how love can, it's just manifesting. We're dancing with each other. And this recognition, I think, would solve a lot of the world's issues. I think there's other things too. You know, I think I'm big on, you know, health and nutrition. And I feel that it's tough to get to that point of awareness if you don't have these basic needs taken care of, if you don't have your inflammation taken care of, if you don't have your health taken care of, if you're sick, it's tough to get to these states. But that's what yoga was invented for, right? Yoga is a practice of health, of diet, of movement. I feel as though when we take these principles, like I say, off the mat into the world just becomes more pleasant, more beautiful. Yeah. But it starts with the person. It starts with the individual. You know, it's easy. Who knows what would happen, but you have to find out for yourself what will happen inside of you, right? Before we start talking about the world and how this can fix the world and racism and all of these issues and wars and Ukraine, well, find out what happens inside of you first. How can you end the war inside of you first? And I think once we do that, then the external worlds will naturally subside. Because when there's no enemy within, the enemy outside can do us no harm.
One last question that I have is, spirituality to a lot of people is kind of looked at as like a hippie sort of thing. Or what? How do you bring more awareness to spirituality and acceptance of it when there's such a negative bias or judgment by so many people?
Yeah. Well, you know, some people, there's so many different ways, right? There's nature. There's some people go into psychedelics to get to these states. But I think it's humanizing it. You know, like I said, I got my degree in physical, biological anthropology, and we studied the natural path of the human species or the hominid species to go from the Australopithecines to Homo habilis and Homo erectus and the Neanderthals to Homo sapiens. And some have projected the next step from Homo sapiens, which translates to wise man, is Homo spiritus, the spiritual man. I can see that. Now, whether it's just a romantic idea, a romantic notion, will the human species develop these sensitivities that I spoke about? I don't know. But I say it really just starts inside of you, one person. Spirituality is not it's not a religion. It's not a team. You see people, a lot of the people I think that don't understand it, they might wear the costume to appear spiritual. A lot of people have developed what's called a spiritual ego, right? But true spirituality is what I feel is the highest calling of a human being, and it is the dissolution or seeing through the ego and finding out who and what you are. It's simple. It's, you know, there was a book called The Biology of Enlightenment. I don't think spirituality is something you need to turn into a thing that you worship. You don't need crystals. You just need silence and peace within yourself. You just need to start questioning, am I these thoughts? And one of the best ways to do that is to continuously ask yourself, to whom do these thoughts come to? Or to what do these thoughts come to? And where do they go? Because when you can, and this is a revolution. It can be a revolution in an individual's life. It can be scary, but then you watch that too. You watch the fear. So there's a subtle witnessing that you develop the more and more you watch your thoughts like clouds in the sky. You just watch. Don't try to change. Just watch. We use the word spirituality, but you don't even need that word, to be honest. It's really just getting back home, getting to finally be a human being instead of a human doer. Thank you guys so much for listening to that episode of Sauna Sessions. If you want to know more about science, spirituality, health, wellness, go to lifeuniversity.com. That's life, Y-O-U, university.com. I've got some cool things coming out very, very soon. We've got a course. We've got gratitude journals, mood journals coming down the pipeline so very soon. But there's a newsletter that you can sign up for and keep track of everything that I've got coming out. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure you subscribe, make sure you rate, and send a comment. How did you enjoy this episode? And what do you want to hear for the next episode? Until then, peace.